And we'll move on to the sixth case of this morning, United States against Stone King. Mr. Page?
Yes, may it please the court, Mr. Murphy. My name is Jeff Page. I'm appearing today on behalf of Russell Stone King, the appellant in this case. We are appealing the decision of the trial court, which denied our motion to suppress evidence after a hearing. Factually, in summary, and that your honors probably have read the brief and familiar with the facts, but just briefly, there were officers that responded to an apartment complex to investigate a chemical odor. Upon arrival of these officers, Mr. Stone King, my client, was seated in a car with a Daniel Julius. About 10 or 15 minutes prior to that time frame, Officer Butterfield had been at the apartment by himself. I believe he was not qualified, I guess, enough to determine whether this chemical smell was one of methamphetamine.
Well, maybe he just didn't want to go into it. I understand from the briefs and what I've seen that bald or long hair or whatever, it was uncontested that Mr. Stone King was the same person that they had seen upstairs in the apartment.
It was uncontested that Mr. Stone King had been in the apartment. Now, whether they had seen him or not, I think, is a different issue. He testified at the hearing.
I thought he said at the hearing that he was the one who was in the apartment when they came in.
Yeah.
Well, he said he was in the apartment when they came in. Now, whether he was, there were a couple of people in the apartment. I don't know. One officer testified, Officer Butterfield testified, that the person he saw was a long-haired individual. Then we have another, Inspector Kittner, who testified that on that particular day, Russell Stone King was bald, and Mr. Stone King testified that he was bald. I agree.
But the problem is, once he says, I was the man in Julius's apartment when Butterfield first arrived, and then he's sitting there next to the other guy, Julius, I guess, when they come back, you know, with the reinforcements, it seems to me that pretty much leaves an issue out of the case. And then at that point, it seems that Coons does have reasonable suspicion to detain him for a relatively brief period of time, the most, say, 30 minutes.
Well, I think it's the officer's knowledge. It's whether the officers had a reasonable suspicion that he was involved in criminal activity. I'm not sure it's clear from the record, and Judge Scott really didn't make it clear as to what her thoughts were on that issue, whether they saw Stone King in there or not, albeit he was in there. I mean, there's no quarrel about that. Whether the officers saw him in there, that certainly was one issue. Her factual finding really didn't touch upon that. Her factual finding was that second time that Mr. Stone King went up into the apartment when they were conducting the search. That's what she based her denial
on. I sort of read that as her kind of saying, you know, have it your way. You know, you went back in to get your remote control, but if that's what you did, then it's reasonable to infer that he was actually gone for a moment or two, and Coons must have seen him. At some point, Coons is back and with him, so Coons must have seen him emerging from the house. And I saw her kind of as almost going down two separate paths, and she didn't have to disbelieve Stone King in order to find reasonable suspicion.
Well, I see where you're heading. I don't think you can make that reasonable inference on the second issue. I don't think you can make a reasonable inference that Officer Coons saw Russell Stone King. First of all, we don't have any testimony to that regard. We have Officer Coons telling us that he saw two people in the car when he arrived, that Daniel Julius, or one of the people, went up with the officers, and that Stone King remained down with him. There was no mention by Officer Coons that Stone King ever went up.
But we have to believe one. I mean, this is just a classic conflict in testimony, isn't it, for the district judge to resolve. Either Coons and Stone King are in one another's presence every minute of the time, or Stone King has slipped away for a brief, apparently, period of time. One or the other of those things. And so the district judge says, okay, I'm going to believe the version that Stone King has given me, that he slips away for a minute, which means he has to have come back down again, because when all is said and done, he's back with Coons by the time the rest of them emerge from the apartment. So why can't she resolve that factual issue? And once she's resolved it, why can't we take reasonable inferences from the facts that she's found?
Well, I think you can certainly take reasonable inferences, but I don't think you can infer that even if you accept Russell Stone King's version, which she did, he comes back out of the apartment. We don't know where Coons is at that point. He could have had his back turned. He could have been around the corner having a cigarette. We don't know. I mean, and there's nothing in the record to suggest that he saw Stone King coming out of that apartment. Certainly had he, I think he would have mentioned it, and Stone King would have mentioned it, quite frankly. I think he would have stated on the record that the officer was standing there and he saw me come out of the apartment, and that's when he detained me. That's not in the record. So I don't think we can make that inference and put something in the record that's simply not there. So I guess, the quarrel that I have is that, with all due respect to Judge Scott, she is, and I understand that you can impute one officer's knowledge to another officer, but what I think she has done is impute Russell Stone King and his knowledge over to an officer that really didn't have any knowledge that he was in the house.
Except he's there, and then he's gone, and then he reappears somehow. Whether Officer Coons sees him emerge from the house, it's not like he erases from the universe for a minute or two, and Officer Coons might be a little worried, given that they know they're there for a meth problem, at least a suspected meth problem, because apparently the odor is pretty palpable. So we get back to the reasonableness of Coons' detention of Mr. Stone King, because by the time the search happens, if the detention was okay, he's done once they find that 9mm bullet.
I'm
right?
with you. You're right.
So if the detention itself is reasonable for any reason on these various variants of the facts, then I don't know whether you're left with an argument that 30 minutes is too long, it has to be 15, or whether you're not making that point.
No, I'm not making that point. I think the point is you've picked up on it. It's real simple. Did the officers know that he was in the apartment, specifically on that second time frame when Judge Scott bases her factual findings on? Mm-hmm. Did the officers have reason to know that he was up there and was coming out of the apartment? I say no. I don't think you can make that inference.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Murphy.
May it please the court and counsel, Brad Murphy, Assistant United States Attorney again. The district court's ruling finding reasonable suspicion should be affirmed. Officer Coon, or Corporal Coon, even though some of this knowledge would be imputed to him from Officer Butterfield, had these following facts.
Don't we need to know that Butterfield had some opportunity to pass these facts along to him? I mean, how far do we take the imputed knowledge doctrine? You know, if you tell a Chicago police officer down in Hyde Park something, do we expect that the people up in Rogers Park immediately know?
No. I believe it's clear from the record here that Corporal Coon knew certain things because they had, in fact, been related to him by Officer Butterfield. And I think that's on transcript page 70, for instance. His knowledge that apartment 4 contained a suspected meth lab came directly from Officer Butterfield. We know they were in communication here, Your Honor.
What and happened with this bald, long hair thing? I mean, that's seems
okay.
Sort of odd that it was so important that he said a guy with long hair, and it turned out the guy was bald.
Well, I'm going to agree with the defense counsel for once, maybe.
Well, I know he admitted he was there.
Well, it goes more than that. Down below in his argument on page 111, the transcript, defense counsel took the position that it was not a mistaken identification. It was just that he had his description incorrect.
How do you explain that? Description incorrect.
That's a major...
Long hair as opposed to bald.
It is indeed. And again, I think by the time the defendant got around to admitting in his own testimony that he'd been in there, that it wasn't that great of an issue before the district court.
We don't have anything fancy like he had a bandana on his head or anything that you could mistake for hair, I take it.
No, and that's not the factual discrepancy that bothers me the most. And I'll up front this one to you. The fact that when he starts pulling things out of his pocket, there's no stereo remote. That bothers me more. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't there have been? If he'd actually gone up there? But in any event, I still submit there's reasonable suspicion based on the knowledge that, that Corporal Kuhn had that Apartment 4 contained this meth lab and that the defendant had been seen in Apartment 4 earlier by Officer Butterfield at the time of this very strong odor.
When the ammunition was, the bullet was pulled out, did they know he was a felon at that time?
Yes. Officer Kittner had already been to his
squad. I know, but did Coons know?
I'm not sure Officer Coons knew at that time, but Officer Kittner is the one who asked for the permission to search. He did know.
So the searching officer is the one who
correct.
The
searching
the
officer is Kittner
bullet,
here.
Because he's back downstairs by now, right?
Correct. He came back down to his truck, I think it was.
So if Coons would have searched him, I mean, it's not illegal to have a bullet in your pocket unless you're a felon.
That's also a correct statement, Your Honor. The additional factors going into the reasonable suspicion are that, and this Corporal Kuhn saw, he saw him, the defendant, sitting in his car with the occupant of Apartment 4, who's the same principal subject of the investigation who'd given the phony story earlier to the police. And lastly, the defendant makes apparently an unseen and unauthorized access back into the apartment building during the course of the search of what is now a suspected crime scene. I would suggest that if those are the facts as they would appear to Corporal Kuhn, Corporal Kuhn may well have been remiss in his duties not to detain this individual coming out of the crime scene as such. And
of course, as your opponent points out, we have no idea if Corporal Kuhn's saw Mr. Stone King come out. I don't know what he was doing on this version of the facts, but you know, maybe he was doing something in the squad car or otherwise occupied and wasn't all that worried about Mr. Stone King. Mr. Stone King may have just kind of reappeared and said, "Hi, I'm back," you know, or anything.
Under the findings of fact made by the district court, I think it is a reasonable inference that Corporal Kuhn would have to know that this defendant, who'd had the earlier two contacts, he'd been in the apartment and he'd been in the car with the subject of the investigation, that it would be reasonable for Corporal Coons to infer that the only reason that he would go back into that particular apartment would be to have contact again with either a suspected meth lab or with the occupant of the apartment.
But why does it matter? I mean, if in fact we assume that Coons, from his point of view, is aware that Stone King is gone for a little bit of time, why does it matter where Stone King went? I mean, I would think if you're in the middle of a drug investigation, somebody might slip around to the back of the house and bury drugs that are on him or anything. I can see all sorts of reasons why you might be concerned about someone slipping away, but I don't know that you need to get as far as imputing knowledge to Coons that Stone King actually went back to the apartment.
Well, I'm simply suggesting it was a reasonable inference for Corporal Coons to make, and because it's a reasonable inference, it factors into the reasonable suspicion here.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. For the no further questions, I will take my leave. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Page.
Just briefly, the court had asked counsel regarding the imputed knowledge and what I think what knowledge Corporal Coons had. I think it's unclear from the record what knowledge Corporal Coons had. I would quite frankly say not much. He didn't remember much. I do know that he would have had knowledge that there was a chemical odor, that they were investigating a chemical odor, suspecting methamphetamine. What is not in the record is that he had been told allegedly by Officer Butterfield about who was upstairs. I don't think Corporal Coons ever was informed that Officer Butterfield had seen a long-haired man upstairs or that he had seen, quite frankly, Daniel Julius upstairs. That is not in the record. So just to clear that up, I'm not sure Corporal Coons possessed that knowledge when he detained Russell Stone King. That's all I have.
All right. Thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes, ma'am.
We thank you very much for your help. Thank you to the government as well. We'll take the case under advisement.